Hello, everyone, and welcome to TV and Movie Reviews Podcast brought to you by TPENetwork.com. I'm Hank.
And I'm John.
And we're your hosts. We're covering all the biggest movies and television shows that we don't want to start an unofficial podcast for. So we just try to touch bases about them once they're wrapped up and give our take on them. So as I said, today will be Cloak and Dagger. That was on Hulu. John has some comments he'd like to make. So, John, take it away.
All right. So first things first, I wanted to say that I was wrong about this series. I know that we had past episodes where I went on saying that it looked and felt like it was going to fit into the demographic as like a tween television show. And I was absolutely wrong about that. The feel of this was so grown up that I'm looking back and I thought that The Runaways, which is another Hulu show, was pretty grown up. No, that one to this one, that's like the tween show, most definitely. And I want to say I'm sorry for if I ever made this look like it was in a bad light, because it would turn out to be a terrific series.
I would concur as far as what I had said as well about I'm probably not going to check it out because it looks like a tween romance show. And I was a little concerned about that. But as John convinced me to watch it, I was drawn in from episode one on. So let's get into our conversation. And I want to start with the setting. I never read the comics. I didn't know where it was going to be set at. But them setting it in New Orleans, you know, making it to have some mystique and some magic and mystery and stuff. I thought that fit for this series. Did it work for you?
Yeah. I mean, and you're also talking about like a whole part of the country we really haven't even like discussed in any of the other shows. So, you know, it's untouched from everything else that's really been going on. And I have to also say, I know so little about this series. The only thing that I know is when I had that Marvel encyclopedia way back when that there was a it went through D and Dagger is in there, actually with C as well. So Cloak and Dagger were both in there. So I knew information based upon that encyclopedia. But besides that, I never read a comic book or nothing. I went into this knowing that at some point in time they would have superpowers and that was about it. And, you know, it was a leap of faith getting into the show.
So we love the setting. We're both in on that. Let's just run down some of the characters. Not every single character, of course, but just some of the main characters and some of the people that help flesh out the stories. Dagger, Olivia Holt, she played that character. And I was set to not like her. I was just totally ready to go, you know what? I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. But her story was really, really compelling. Factor in the mother and her dad and then her, you know, this mystery boy that's weaving in and out of her life. And then her other circle of, not even a circle, her other friend that she kind of hangs out to dry at one point. It was a really compelling story because you kind of understood why she did some of the things she did. And I just thought they really fleshed her character out in an excellent manner.
Yeah, I mean, the first like 10 minutes into the show, I had my questions about her. But then basically you went from like this cute girl that you weren't expecting to be, oh, you know, she's going to be bubbly, the whole thing, to like, you know, knocking the guy out and robbing the house. And you're just like, what am I getting myself into? And then, you know, it just seeing her, you know, basically find herself through this entire, it was a down, up, because, you know, she was down the dumps and she finds herself going through all this. But in the process of finding herself, she basically starts going right back down an even darker path because of all this newfound power and the things that she is finding that she can get away with and not realizing that she's even taking a worse turn than what she was before. And then at the end, pulling herself back out. I mean, it was a very compelling character and she did a great job acting it.
And let's talk about Cloak for a minute. Aubrey Joseph portrayed that character. There was a lot of times on screen that he worked, But there were certain times where I don't know if it is the stage of whatever age he is in life, but his voice is changing a bit or something. It's like getting super deep in some scenes and stuff. There were just some moments where he kind of took me out of believing he was this teenager.
Well, didn't he feel like he was unsure in a lot of it? And I don't mean so much unsure as the character, but he almost kind of like, there's a couple of times in there I was like, I don't think he knows what he's doing. But I mean, it wasn't that many times, but like every now and then it was like, you know, his entire problem with trying to understand everything that was going on and happening to him and happening with her and why he kept ending up in random places. But like it was like he was literally in the dark for half of the series until you get to about, you know, when he starts to understand what all is going on. Oh, and let's not leave out the fact that, you know, what is it? Your standard, let's get our powers, you know, focused and working by trying to put ourselves in a being killed situation.
Yes, he did have some issues corralling his powers. But a really interesting character, though. I love the brother story and always trying to chase that ghost. I'm very well versed in that. I had an older brother pass away when I was just a little boy, and I totally understand that need for closure and need for answers when everybody else has let something go. So I really liked a lot of the aspects of the character, but some parts I was like, I don't know. So, you know, pretty overall, I would pass him overall.
Well, I also liked his like the other family background, like this and all this stuff that his dad was involved in and all that, like Louisiana history and, you know, him not even knowing that he was connected to that, which leads to one of my notes right here. Like in finding that he finds the cloak, there's quotes in the air there, the cloak that his brother had made, which was your throwback to the comic book series, because that was basically the exact same layout of pattern, everything that the cloak from the comic books had.
Yeah, I liked that nod. I liked his parents. The actors that portrayed them were really good. The cop, Connors, what did you think about that? The likelihood that he would still be around in the area and all that kind of stuff. Did that seem plausible?
It did. Towards the end there, when they explained that he was more like a ghost, like he was a police officer, but he's one of those police officers that are never recognized because of the fact that, you know, he gets himself dirty and like in certain situations. And if he, and by doing that, since he was, you know, basically being that, you know, drug dealer or whatnot, then he's established himself now for quite a bit. And he's got so much leeway in with the police station and knows how to go get around things. I do believe it, because I feel that if he were to go somewhere else, then he's got to start all that back over again. And it's not as easy, especially when you already have the foothold where he was.
Okay. Doing that much dirty business, I figured he'd be dead, long dead by that time that this kid comes of age to try to track him down and all that stuff. The dad is really well done. What he actually does with his day life and stuff, I'm not 100% sure. It seems like the mom is more successful, but it's an interesting dynamic. I really liked Evita, the girlfriend of Cloak's in the show, and I thought she added a lot of depth to his character, a lot of development to his character, and even has her own little side story and stuff. I thought she was really well done.
And an all around cutie.
Yeah, she is not hard to look at either.
But I agree. I thought that she did a very good job. She was real good as being like the overall storyteller. Like she kept the ball rolling. And then when you got there towards the end, realizing the divine pairing, and, you know, she was the intermediate from her aunt to them, you know, trying to keep this ball rolling and make sure the things that are meant to happen actually happen. So I hope that in the second season that, you know, they definitely bring her back
and do something with that character. You'd really be wasting things if you don't.
All that talent. Yeah, I agree.
Ivan and Mina Hess almost a, I don't know if it was, it seemed like a little sidetrack to the series when they go into that whatever realm is and trying to get Ivan Hess out of his weird state that he's in of wash, rinse, repeat. And I just thought that was a weird detour that the series took. I'm not saying it was bad. I just think it was a strange path to go down. Did you like that or no?
I did, because it helped explain more of what it is they can do together, because like one of them sees their hopes, one of them sees their fears, but together they can actually get down to what's really going on. So like if they touched, so like if she touched him, it wasn't where she needed to go. They couldn't get through that blockage without the other half of her, which was, you know, Cloak. So, I mean, I don't know if we explore it elsewhere. I'd be curious to see how that ends up, you know, unraveling more. But for this scenario with what they were doing, I was okay with that.
Okay.
But and, I mean, then you had that weird time lapse thing there, yes, where she was like, you know, talking to her dad, and she was like, "I've been here for like a week or something like that," and it's just it gets really kind of like convoluted with the time frame that's going on. And I understand that you're in some dream realm, or a subconscious state, and you're just trying to figure that stuff out. But, you know, it does tend to get a little strange there after a while.
Yes, it really did. And I didn't know if that would turn off some fans or not. It didn't turn me off totally, but they were going down a path where I was like, don't go too much further or you're going to lose me.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Bridget O'Reilly, let's just cut to the chase and get to when she gets beat up by Connors. That was brutal. That was hard to watch for me. I'm telling you what, I was like, oh my gosh, and none of those people would help or anything. Her character is one of those true blue cops that's trying to do the right thing. And when the pieces don't fall just right, I mean, she was in all sorts of trouble. What a mess. I don't know where you go from that point forward.
Well, I mean, that was some Netflix Daredevil season one fight stuff right there. That's how I'll gauge that. No, but there's a, I thought that she was good. It was kind of like loose at the beginning. I really wasn't understanding the character. And then I started getting more like when she, this was another thing. It's like on my list here, like, you know, making this more adult oriented. The drug usage in this was kind of bonkers for any kind of Marvel thing that they've got there. And she's like doing like lines of coke, like off the, you know, just but to get in the headspace. I'm like, man, it's like they're not joking around with this in this series. But before we move on. So I was looking this up, and this is actually something I didn't realize, that she is the connection to Luke Cage.
Oh, so yes. Yes.
She specifically says that she's from Harlem. But then in season two of Luke Cage, Misty Knight is talking to some colleagues, and she mentions that Callahan is in Maui and O'Reilly moved to New Orleans. So she openly talks about Bridget O'Reilly that went to New Orleans for this. So out of all of the extra series that are out there, this so far seems to be one of the true, like, weaving into the other series. That's not like what I'm saying is, like, you know, Netflix, clearly Netflix series, they're all connected. This Hulu series, you know, we didn't know how connected they were going to be, but it's connected. They're basically tossing it out there that this is connected to the overall MCU universe.
Love that. Love it.
And I've got more, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Peter Scarborough, he was a dirtball from the get-go. There were a lot of weird things when they were showing, like, what people thought of him and stuff. I that was really disturbing, to be honest.
I didn't understand why every single one was in the exact same office setting, though.
Oh, that's was a
like,
good point.
That was like the only place that she could project herself into. But I don't remember. No, I guess so, because wasn't Cloak, every time he did that, weren't they like in like a field, like, or like in the woods, like running away from something?
Yeah. Yes.
So I wonder what those are supposed to represent. I actually don't know.
Budget.
Oh, yeah. But still, even with the budget, they probably had some sort of like meaning behind why they ended up like in these two locations over and over again.
That's a good point. Maybe she spent so much time in those offices that that's just where she can project her memories and thoughts towards those offices.
And we're saying that he was so much running around out in the woods at night. I don't believe it. I don't believe it, man.
He was running around in the bayou. at least I didn't go for the old "it's okay by me if it's okay by you."
Yep.
All right. I wanted to talk about Melissa Bowen for just a hot second.
Okay.
Melissa Bowen, Dagger's mom. She was an awful person for the majority of this season.
Yeah, but that was trying to give you more of a reflection that, you know, she's not like she could go home to a better life. She couldn't, because her mom had almost the exact same fall that she had.
There's bad, and then there's that.
then there is a get your daughter stash out of the vent in the bathroom. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I mean, she almost had no redeeming qualities. Almost.
And her and the lawyer were sitting there doing lines of coke, too. I was just like, man, wow, geez, what'd you do with all the money?
And they were just so nonchalant about, like, well, here's what happened. What had happened was, you know, it was terrible. Terrible. Yeah. Are there any other characters you wanted to touch on? Those are the main ones I wanted to talk about.
No.
Let's move on to some of the problems that we found in this first season. I had pointed out that Cloak, you know, sometimes his voice would get way up here. And I was like, you're kind of taking me out of your teenage, you know, role here with your grown man deep voice. But, you know, that was just a nitpick on that. The way Dagger left Liam, I don't know, was he just a friend of hers or...
Well, no, too. He was a friend, and he was also like her conspirator when it came to like robbing things. But secretly, he was in love with her, and she just, you know, as far as she was concerned, they just had a business relationship all this time. And then I guess when she used her powers and found that, you know, he cared for her, that then she just kind of like chickened out. She's like, I can't do this.
Okay, because the way she kind of left him high and dry. I was like, you're not doing a good job of making this character, you know, like I want to invest in this character and I need to know that push comes to shove, the hero is going to do the right thing. And now, she kind of just left him hanging.
I'm trying to remember because I had a moment of like, why? I can't believe she's doing that, because he's going to turn her in, which he never did. But there was something, I think. So she got turned in, or he got caught and was turned in. She couldn't go and get him because, one, she didn't have any money to make bail. And secondly, they were also looking for a possible second suspect. And then they would have used her to fish him out, even though he called her to come get out. I mean, I kind of understand. I mean, which kind of makes me think, why wouldn't he have realized this as well?
Okay.
Okay. But still, you know, there at some point in time, you can wire some money or something like that.
Yeah.
And we come to find out later on, you know, with the money all up in the vent, that she did have that. But maybe she was, no, because I was going to turn around and say that maybe she was going to try and make this her break and go like legit. But no, she clearly wasn't in the process of doing that. So I don't know. I could watch him come back as a baddie like in season two.
Yes, definitely. And I wouldn't blame him, to be honest with you. Speaking of money stashing, I thought they made her look really stupid stashing that money in that statue. I really thought that was dumb. Like, her character seemed dumb.
Oh, I mean,
that much cash? Come on.
Yeah, but think about where she was living.
That place could have burned down at any minute.
I know, and she couldn't really keep anything of that importance there. So she's trying to save up, you know. I mean, and she's not keeping it in a bank. It's not completely off the wall. I mean, I think that might would look for something a little bit easier, but I couldn't put it past a person to do such a thing.
Okay. I just, from the outside looking in, it just seemed like, yikes. Like, they just did it to move the story in that direction instead of this character going, oh, I learned my lesson from hiding stuff in places where people know I'm at. You know, it's almost like she didn't learn a lesson.
I get that. I get what you're talking about here. Okay. Well, yeah, I could go either way with that then.
Another problem I was thinking about is like when Connors first starts to encounter Cloak and starts to understand what's transpiring. Wouldn't you take that opportunity to get on with your life somewhere else or something? You know what I mean? Like, would you continue to be like, you know what? I think I will stop the person that can just bounce all over the place that I just seemingly can't kill.
You know what? I don't know. Maybe just so stuck in his life that, you know, he had to continue with what it is he was doing. I really don't have a very good like answer to that, because I think that was more or less just plot driven. Right. When you got to that point, it wouldn't make good sense, you know, to have your key driving point of, you know, one character's storyline to just, you know, I'm out of here. You're weird. I'm gone. This is all too weird for me. I'm leaving.
And then the entire cover up itself didn't seem well thought out. I mean, look how many loose threads they had with Ivan Hess, and, you know, just they just had too much information was out there. If that rinky dink lawyer was putting together all that information, imagine somebody that is really high up the scale like Daredevil, you know, if they tried to sink their claws into getting enough information and stuff to take them down.
That was like the wild card, because you never knew that he was collecting all that information. So
until
the dad was collecting the information, let alone the lawyer.
Right. I thought that was a little bit weak for a company of that size and stature. It seems like they would have had everything taken care of prior to the way they took care of it in this
season. I was going to say, they did have like an assassin out there mopping up the place. So, I mean, that shocked me too. When she came into that lawyer's office and blew his head off right there, I was just like, whoa, yeah, you just did that. Wow, okay. That's like bringing me back to the Kingpin smashing that guy's head in the car door. Because that's the first time you've ever seen something that hard in a Marvel anything. And that was for Netflix. And so that kind of like set the bar for where Netflix could stand with their violence. Hulu is a different story. The only thing that they had out before that was Runaways. And you didn't have anything violent. Not like that.
No.
And when she blew his head off, I was like, whoa. Okay, so we've got straight up head blowing off murder going on, lines of cocaine and drug usage, and we're just knocking people out, robbing them blind. This is just getting weird. Oh yeah, you know what, that's one thing of the episode that I didn't care for as much, and I get it. If, you know, they had the possible like rape scene going on with her, with that guy and her, so they want to try and bring that to a better light. But I do believe that they probably dragged that on even after they caught him and they were wrapping that up. Like, they kept bringing him back out to try and drag him around a little bit more. And I'm like, there are other things going on I'm trying to pay attention to in this show, that they did the right thing. They got their justice for it. But why are we still hanging out on this guy?
Yes, I agree. They seem like in this series so far that they've kind of gone down some rabbit holes that they don't need to go down, you know, like way too far.
I mean, unless all this comes back in season two, and in that case it was well worth them doing all this, which that's yet to be determined.
Let's switch gears here, and we talked about the problems. We've kind of already gone over most of our wins and such, so let's switch gears here, and John has a few Easter eggs that he wants to point out.
All right, so clearly one of the biggest things that is connecting all of this together is Roxxon. So to refresh everyone, and maybe even you too, Hank. So Roxxon was featured in Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Daredevil, and Iron Fist.
Wow.
So, and this was their like Louisiana division for like oil drilling, as well as it is proposed that this, whatever it is that they were drilling, might have had a huge connection to the dark matter from Agent Carter in season two.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we saw it there and it was very uncontained, but it was able to be absorbed and be used. And I mean, with an explosion as well, you know, it changes. And it's not necessarily going to be the same thing to everyone, but they haven't come right out and said that that is the same stuff. But it is definitely something that if they wanted to do that, they've already got the grounds laid out in Agent Carter, and now they can come back for it.
Really cool. Anything else?
Yes, one more. So did you notice where the main valve shutoff, where was it located?
Somewhere where Man-Thing could pop up out of.
Warehouse 616.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's funny. I'm sorry.
I'm like, thank you. You've now just helped call back to everything now.
I had to get a man thing reference in there somewhere. Let's dole out our rating, shall we?
Sure.
What are you giving season one, John?
I'm going to give season one a 7.5.
Oh, nice.
After I got past my own hesitation of what it could possibly be, I really enjoyed it. And even though it had those, like, you know, it's the entire, we are superheroes, but we don't know it. We're getting on our feet. But thing is, it wasn't even necessarily that. It was them dealing with their own life issues and then throw this on top of the whole thing, which made it very compelling because it's like, I mean, they're having to deal with two things at the same time instead of one for the whole show. And I couldn't have been any happier with how they put that together. And if I had to compare, and I know we didn't do a review on Runaways, but I enjoyed Runaways. I probably would have given Runaways like a 7. But now compare that to this, which I've seen what they can do. I would drop Runaways down to a 6 or a 5.5. It was good, but it wasn't Cloak and Dagger good. I thought that they did a terrific job with the stories, with their choice in actors, you know, playing these characters, and the direction that they went with everything, basically not making it look like, oh, it's a big happy ending. Because at the end, it wasn't a happy ending. I mean, you got it, because in essence, they switched places at the end. Yes. Because, you know, now he is the one who is out of home, and she's the one who's now with her mom trying to make up that life that they've lost for the last, you know, 2 decades.
Good point. I think I liked it just a pinch more than you did. I think I have it figured out because when I first heard about this, I had zero expectations. And you kept saying, hey, man, you should check it out. Hey, you should give it a try. Hey, definitely. It's not a tween romance story. Give it a look. And when I finally got into it, I got into it. And I really liked a lot of the elements of the story. I know I nitpick some things and stuff, but that shouldn't take away from the main portion of the series and this phenomenal story they're trying to tell. Really liked it. So I'm going to give it a proficient 8 out of 10.
Okay. I will. How about this? Maybe I need to just stop dealing with halves.
No, never. No, don't change your score. Never do that.
Okay. All right. So I'll stick with 7.5 then. But before we get off here, let's not forget that at the very end, we introduced Mayhem into this series.
Oh, yes. Okay. Do you have anything up on that character or not really?
I mean, she is just a Cloak and Dagger character. I think that when we're done with season 2, I'd like to delve more into that. It's just that was your Bridget O'Reilly. You know, she ends up being season 2's definite villain because Mayhem is one of the Cloak and Dagger's primary villains in their comic books.
Cool. And there's probably no way they could spin it any different, correct?
No.
All right. Well, I'm excited because I'm going to say this, like some of the streaming Netflix shows, they do a really good job and sometimes too good of a job building up other characters besides the main characters better than they do building some of the main characters. That's always been my praise / complaint of some of the shows.
Yeah. I mean, a good example is, although now she is an actual bigger character, but like Misty Knight, yep. Or even before Misty Knight, it was, I can't remember her name, the nurse that they use in every single series. And it's like,
I was going to go down the list and each show and point them out because, you know, and Jessica Jones, her best friend is like the star of the show. I mean, her character gets more screen time and stuff than some of the other characters they're really trying to flesh out.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking, it's funny, I was just thinking about that show today in comparison to this show, how at the end of season 2 that her and her friend switch places, basically, because, you know, if you look in the past, you know, she was that pop star. She was like in the drugs. And then Jessica was like, you know, I'm trying to do the good thing and the right thing. And then, you know, look at them now where they've switched places, where Jessica's like, you know, I just don't give a rat's a. And some of the comparisons are there, but not completely. But like when you look at like your end result, yeah, it kind of matches up.
Yeah. Hellcat, Patsy Walker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you said, Misty Knight. They're really, really giving her a good push on all these shows. Colleen Wing on Iron Fist. I mean, you know, some people tune in for her more than they do for Danny Rand. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of the TV and Movie Reviews Podcast, brought to you by TPENetwork.com. For all our shows, head to TPENetwork.com/subscribe. For John, I'm Hank. Until the next time, we're signing off.
See you, everybody.
Tiger Prince Entertainment.
There ain't nothing else like it.